parts that didn't substantiate their thesis. The what we propose to do is to have an exit poll with publicly available data. If people are interested, the project, we describe it on my website, which is electionintegrity.org. But again, the idea is to have this data completely available, transparent. Ideally, we ought to have a transparent voting system as well. But until we do, then we have to pursue means to verify it.
We've got to take our top of the hour break. But I tell you what we'll do, if you can hang on for a minute, there's a couple other questions that I wanted to cover. So if you can hang out for another 5 minutes or so, I'd love to be able to do that. You got five more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. I'm talking with Stephen Freeman, and Stephen is the author of Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Well, you know, sliding into the Head On with Bob Kincaid program here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive. The revolution. From Groton to Tacoma.
This is a Quality News Network. The Senate released a report today that says pre-war intelligence on Iraq never established a link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. In fact, it says that he viewed al-Qaeda as a threat. President Bush justified the U.S. invasion by linking Saddam to al-Qaeda and 9/11. Another part of the report says the U.S. relied on false information provided by an anti-Saddam group to support the 2003 invasion. Although U.S. intelligence agents questioned the credibility of the group, they still used a source who made up a story about Iraq's WMDs. In Afghanistan today, a suicide bomber plowed into a convoy of U.S. military vehicles near the American embassy in Kabul, killing 18 people, including two American soldiers. It's the worst terrorist attack there since the U.S. invasion 5 years ago. Near Baghdad, an American soldier was killed today in a roadside bombing. At least 8 Shiite pilgrims were also killed today in attacks at a religious festival in Karbala. In Lebanon today, Israel lifted its naval blockade. Ships from Greece, Italy, and France are now patrolling the coastline. The last of Israel's troops are expected to leave in the next 2 weeks. In Washington, the House has passed a bill that would ban horse slaughters in the U.S., but members of both parties are angry, saying more important issues should be addressed in the last 15 legislative days left in the session. The bill is now headed to the Senate. On Capitol Hill, some Republicans and top military officers are worried about the legality of President Bush's proposal to use military commissions to try terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay. The New York Times reports they're preparing a different proposal that would give defendants more rights. In Geneva, the UN head of human rights says all CIA secret prisons for terror suspects should be abandoned and that transferring some of the suspects to Guantanamo Bay doesn't go far enough. About 100 detainees have been imprisoned in the facilities. Meanwhile, Indonesian authorities want to speak with one of those transferred prisoners. He's suspected of being involved in the 2002 Bali bombings that killed more than 200 people. And in Russia today, engineers began destroying its stockpile of bombs filled with deadly chemicals such as VX and sarin. Russia has the world's largest arsenal of deadly chemicals and aims to destroy 20% of it by 2007. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
On Monday, officials will unveil a 100-foot sculpture that lists all the names of those who died in the September 11th attacks. But the memorial includes the names of at least 40 people who did not die because a sculpture used an outdated list of names. New reports say Hewlett-Packard investigators accessed reporters' phone records while conducting an internal investigation of its board members. California's Attorney General is continuing to investigate. BP's top corrosion engineer position had been vacant for more than a year before the oil spill was discovered in Alaska's North Slope. That's according to an internal company audit. It also revealed that another key position had been left vacant in 2005. Belfour USA, a construction company specializing in disaster recovery, has agreed to pay $250,000 to 163 workers. They were denied overtime pay while cleaning up after Hurricane Katrina. Amazon.com is out with a new digital video downloading service called Amazon Unbox. It offers thousands of TV shows, movies, and other videos from more than 30 studios and networks. Europe's largest carmaker, Volkswagen, says it will consider providing workers with job guarantees, but that's if they guarantee to work longer hours for the same pay. Light sweet crude settled today at $66.25. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 61 points, NASDAQ up 10, S&P 500 up 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, this is not Bob. It's not even close. Well, I'm kind of close to Bob, but it's not Bob. Glad to have you back aboard with us, this special presentation here of the Head On Radio Network and at Camp Democracy. This is Bruce Birch. I'm coming to you live from Camp Democracy. And, man, what an amazing day it's been. It's starting to, twilight is settling upon the camp, and it's such a cool, wonderful evening, isn't it? Just, didn't it feel great, Stephen? Let's see, just turn your mic on there. Switch on the top. Up. There you go, there he is.
Yeah.
All right.
I have a voice.
Stephen Freeman is back with us. He's the author of Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? I had one more question for you that I really wanted to pick your brain about. Now, George Bush and John Kerry, that night of the election, how could... I mean, as close as it was and with evidence pouring in about the reality of what had happened, how could John Kerry concede it so easily and so readily without, you know, really taking a look and examining, you know, what happened?
Right, yeah, that's one of the most disappointing parts of this whole story is really the lack of contestation on the part of the Democrats. When you talk to reporters and say, explain the story, they say, well, if this was really the case, how come the Democrats aren't contesting it? And, well, we talked to people from Kerry's camp, and what seems to be the case is that Kerry made a calculation that evening that he was not going to get the presidency,
that he did not want to go through the challenge. He looked at 2000 and saw Gore, who won a clear plurality throughout the nation, and even looked like he had a clear plurality in Florida, was even without Florida, was only two electoral votes short of victory, and was the sitting vice president. Even he didn't get the presidency, and Kerry said he's behind this much votes in the Ohio and 3 million in the nation, and he's the challenger. Bush is the sitting president. There's no way he's going to get it. He's going to be ripped apart in the media, and why put himself and perhaps why put the country through that?
Stephen, again, I really appreciate you joining us this afternoon and this evening because...
But of course, you know, and as far as Kerry goes,
right.
You know, that doesn't make that the right decision, of course. It
no.
was, you know, he failed to really stand up for his constituents.
I think he did.
For democracy.
I think he did absolutely do the wrong thing. John Edwards, I know, who was his running mate, was, from everything that I've read and understood, was he was ready to go to the mat and basically was told by John Kerry to stand down.
Right.
You know.
But even still, it could have, the Democrats didn't have to all fall in line behind Kerry. They could have contested the count, and they pretty much did step in line.
I'm trying to remember correctly a couple of years ago, was there not a protest of the acceptance of the Ohio electors?
Right. That was, there was some fairly courageous members of the House, mostly of the House Judiciary Committee, only Democrats, and a couple of other congresspeople. One senator also joined in on that. That was Barbara Boxer from California, although she even didn't decide until the last day. And so they did contest it. Most Democrats almost tripped over themselves, saying they weren't really challenging the result of the election, but only expressing certain their concern about problems with the process. But so it seemed to those of us who really had followed exactly what happened and who were aware of the vulnerabilities of the system, a totally inadequate response. But that is what happened. There was a contestation, and in fact, it was the first time an election was contested. So from that perspective, it was a historic event.
Okay. So how can folks get a hold of your, get a hold of your book? And is there a website or?
Right. The book title is "Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Exit Polls, Election Fraud, and the Official Count." My co-author is Joel Blythus, and the book's widely available in bookstores. It could go to Amazon or the publisher, which is Seven Stories Press. I also have a website with additional information. It's www.electionintegrity.org, and a good deal of information. I've given many academic presentations, including one at the American Statistical Association, and so there's quite a bit more information. Although the book is not written for statisticians, it's really written for a lay reader. There also is that statistical backup for those who are interested.
I definitely appreciate. Sorry about that. I definitely do appreciate you joining me today, Stephen, and definitely we'll stay in touch. And as more information comes out, are you guys still doing a lot of research as time goes on, or
yeah, we are
gathering information.
Right, and of course, academic publications take much longer. They really take ridiculously long. It could easily take 3 years for a paper to appear in print. But we're working on some of those and some follow-up, some explanations, you know, about why the Democrats have resisted. Most of all, right now, though, I'm pursuing the independent election poll verification project,
okay.
use of that. So anybody interested in that, again, come to the website, or we'll be making some more prominent announcements of it. For anybody here in Washington, I am speaking tomorrow at 12:30. It's a Congressional Black Caucus meeting in the Washington Convention Center, and then here at Camp Democracy at 10:30 in the morning on the Washington Mall on Sunday.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining me this afternoon, and I really do appreciate all the time that you spend enlightening our listeners as to all of these issues, because you know what? We can do all the marching and protesting and ranting and raving and screaming that we want, but unless the votes are counted, it may not always be for, you know, for it may be for naught. So we need to be very careful to make sure that we change some systems to make sure that that happens. Thanks for joining me, Stephen.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Stephen Freeman, author of Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Exit Polls, Election Fraud, and the Official Count, Stephen Freeman and Joel Blyfus. Please do check that out. The actual foreword was written by John Conyers. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into some more of the program. This is the Head On with Bob Kincaid here at live at Camp Democracy. Bob?
That would be me. Yeah. We'll take a break. I've got several people lined up that we're going to talk to. I think you're going to enjoy every last one of them. So stick around. We'll be right back.
I'm trying to be less polite. I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch of the Bruce Birch Radio Program. John F. Kennedy once said, "Democracy is never a final achievement. It is a call to an untiring effort." From September 5th to September 21st, the citizenry of the United States of America are occupying the National Mall with an encampment aptly named Camp Democracy. Camp Democracy aims to bring together peace and justice movements to find strength in numbers and call attention to the abuses currently being perpetrated by the Bush administration and the Republican Congress. You've heard me say on my shows, it's your democracy too, and it's not a spectator sport. Well, now is the time to put your feet on the street and make your ideas known. Join us as we occupy the People's Park from September 5th to the 21st. Join us as we show the world what a true democratic society does when its leaders cease listening to its people. Join us as we raise our voices and call for fundamental change. For more information, including ride sharing, available rooms, and a schedule of events, please visit www.campdemocracy.org. That's www.campdemocracy.org. Thanks, and I'll see you in D.C.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, Be practical. Get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, 1/3 of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I thank you.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Workers of America have about 700,000 members. We represent people like those flight attendants that are you keep hearing about in the news are the ones who are being dragged into court because they're losing their contracts, because they're having their wages cut. We have members at Delphi who are in court because they're losing their pensions and they're losing their contracts. So we are representatives of people all over the country who are being affected by the Bush administration and what's going on in this country.
So it's to say that money that is being spent in Iraq, as far as I'm concerned, being thrown down a rat hole, is money that could otherwise be spent here. It could be shoring up infrastructure. It could be taking care of public employees.
Oh, absolutely. We have about 125,000 public sector employees inside the CWA, inside the Communications Workers of America. That's public sector workers who are police officers, who are first responders. We're just about at the anniversary of September 11th. We lost 14 of our members between flight attendants, television engineers who were on top of those buildings in transmittal towers who died. We lost members who were working right then on September 11th, and our jobs are being adversely affected every day. There's not money to pay for pensions. There was just a huge fight this summer in the state of New Jersey where a guy decided that the way they would balance their budget was to take away the pensions from the public sector workers. Now, I don't know about you, but I want to be sure that the people who work for me in government are properly compensated, who have a right to retire, who can live a good life, who are going to do a good job. Because if you can't do and survive off the money you make as a public employee, what are you going to have to do? Well, you're going to have to get another job to back it up, right?
Sure.
You're going to have to leave and be replaced and retrained, somebody come in behind you, or you're going to have to work two jobs. If you're working two jobs, you're just not as efficient as if you're working one.
And a lot of the jobs that you just described are the kind of jobs where being squared up in your head and being fresh and clear-headed is of critical importance to not just getting the job done, but to the people that you're doing the job for.
You know, for a long time we all thought that flight attendants were that cute coffee, tea, or me, shall I bring you a drink thing. You know, that was a long time ago, right? But those jobs are about safety. And that's what they're about first. That person is there to get me off that airplane alive if something goes wrong. And I don't want them making $14,000 a year in salary.
Yes.
I want them to be well-trained, capable, rested, and not having to work a couple of other jobs in order to survive.
Well, do you think, Carrie, is this a product of an overall mindset, and by that I mean, you know, we saw, I picked up the Post this morning and I read, Dear Leader says that he needs congressional approval to be able to wiretap us all now. Is there an overall, is it compartmentalized, from the war on Iraq to the war on working people, to the war on the Constitution, or are we talking about symptoms of a larger disease?
I think it's a symptom of a larger disease. I think it is that we have gotten completely out of balance in this democracy. I'm very proud to be a citizen of the United States. I've lived in other parts of the world. I recognize that our Constitution is precious, but I think it's the most endangered species we've got. You know, I love the spotted owl, but my Constitution is in way worse shape.
Well, the fact of the matter is, as we were driving in here, and I got to admit, Gary, I get the whole Jimmy Stewart thing going, the Mr. Smith, you know, Mr. Bob goes to Washington, because I'm, you know, we're driving around gawking like a tourist, and this is an inspiring place to me. It should not be a place of heartbreak. And the fact of the matter is, we passed the National Archives, and I said, you know, reckon we got time to stop. I just want to make sure the Constitution's still there and nobody's taking a Sharpie to it.
Yeah, it was pretty scary. I've been here in Washington, D.C. just as long as that man. You know, I moved back here 5.5 years ago from California to be a union official and serve as an international affairs representative to the Communications Workers First, and then I went back to working on contract campaigns and mobilizations, which is what I do now. And in that job, I initially used to come to work on the metro every day. And then I said, you know, I could be in any city USA because I leave my house, I get on the hole in the ground, and I come out 45 minutes later, and I walk out between two buildings, and I go to my office, and that's it. I said, I'm going to drive to work. And I drive down past the scarily named place, the George Bush Center for Intelligence. Honest to God, there's a sign. It's the highway.
No.
Yes, there is. It's apparently where the CIA is located. It's named for his daddy. But I swear to God, there's a highway sign. I take tourists there because you should see it because you'd think I was
going to. I immediately think of the three little pigs and the little housemaid.
Exactly. And it may well be, but you can't get off and take a look because they'd arrest you. And I drive up Constitution Avenue. I drive by the White House. I drive by the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Monument, and I drive by that archive every day on my way to work. At these museums, I get right up there to the Congress, and I hang a left, because that's the way I go, and then I go to work. I go under the Department of Labor, and then I go and I go to work. And it is a spectacular thing because it's a beautiful city, but also because all of my life growing up in California, I knew about my government. I knew about my right to petition my government, talk to my government, that it was representing me and it was taking care of my rights. And I'm sorry, that just has not been going on for the last many years.
Well, and I mean, I was dangled on my mother's knee, and I got to you. I got Moses among the bulrushes at the same time that I got the founding fathers and the development of the Constitution. This is precious stuff to me. Is there an awareness within your organization? Is there still a burning passion for what this country stands for what it was founded on?
Absolutely. Because we want the working families we represent to have the ability to make enough money to survive, to send their kids to school, to own a house, to have a better life, to know that if you get sick, you can go to the doctor and not be bankrupt and lose your house and lose your livelihood. And we feel incredibly strongly about the right of people to have an opportunity to do better. And when I hear statistics like that the average current CEO is making 781 times more than the average worker in their company,
mm-hmm.
I mean, huh? It used to be about 50 times more, then it was 100 times more, and then over the 90s and into the Bush administration, it has just shot out of control. Between stock options, between the money just going to these CEOs, and they outsource the jobs, and they could care less who works for the company. I've been a union official 30 years, and one of the early local national presidents that I worked with used to say, so who do you think's going to buy your product?
Sure.
They can't buy the products if they don't have any money. I mean, who is General Motors going to sell cars to?
Well, Henry Ford recognized early in his career, he said, I've got to price these vehicles so that the people who are building them can buy them.
And he had to pay the people who were building them enough so that they could afford
exactly.
to live and
yes.
buy a car.
Precisely.
And that balance, that idea that we're all in this together, is completely shot.
Well, yeah, I mean, why is it, as you mentioned Delphi a little
mm-hmm.
bit ago, why is it the guy or woman working at Delphi, why does that worker have to bear the risk of failure? Why does the worker have to bear the risk of the dumb, boneheaded, stupid, ignorant, pig-eyed decisions that are made by a genius who drives the... But the CEO, he doesn't share the risk. You know, you lose your pension, they added another million to his pension.
That's right, because he's in a separate pension plan, not in the same one with us.
Yeah, he's in the good one.
He's in the good one for just executives. You go back about 10 years ago, by law, they used to have everybody in the same pension plan. And then they had to do a test for top heaviness, so to make sure that they weren't giving the best benefits to just the very top people in that plan. But we've had a number of pension reforms in this country, and they keep telling us that the best thing in the world for you is to be able to direct your money. You need a 401k. You do not need one of those defined benefit contribution plans, pension things. Those are old-fashioned. You do not need those. Now, we just had pension reform pass about 30 seconds before they left town in August here in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
passed the Senate. And the bill is so long and so complicated that I'm still studying it and taking seminars to understand all the implications for our members and what is going to happen to us. But what happened there at Delphi was that they took the debt for the pension for all those people who worked there 20, 30, 40 years ago, who did well, who were promised a pension. They took that debt, those obligations, and they cut that off. And they put it over here, and they attached it to Delphi. But Delphi didn't have as many people working there now,
right,
paying into that plan, as the people who are living long and surviving out there on that pension plan. So the solution is that you start to bankrupt that balance sheet, right?
Right.
So the answer is you got to get out of that pension plan, and you got to give it to somebody else to pay off. Well, who do you give it to? You give it to the American taxpayer. You give it to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Trust. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
I remember a guy named Neil in a place called Silverado, Guarantee Corporation.
Yeah.
And it was a bunch of no good crooks ripping mm-hmm. off savings and loans.
Right.
And getting away with it.
Yeah, that would be correct.
Am I wrong, or am I mistaken in thinking that this is another case of failing to learn from our past mistakes?
Well, it depends on who is us
yeah,
and what's the learning. Because the corporations have learned perfectly. They found another way to take an obligation, a promise they made that was required to be paid by law that you couldn't duck out of, and they have found a new way to get out of it.
Well, we've seen a little bit of that, Carrie, back home in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, and of course it's happened to other places as well. That it was a stark learning curve for us, because we watched Horizon Energy.
Mm-hmm.
Go into bankruptcy,
mm-hmm.
and during that bankruptcy, the pension benefits were and the pensioners were defined within the terms of that bankruptcy. And you know, I hate it when we talk about human beings as anything except human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a consumer.
Nope.
I'm a person who eats and buys
mm-hmm.
stuff. I'm not a consumer.
Right.
But these pensioners for Horizon, UMWA workers, they were defined as liabilities.
Oh yeah.
Nothing more than a liability
mm-hmm.
on the schedule.
On that balance sheet of obligations they had to pay.
But by the same token, I noticed that Horizon got away with that,
mm-hmm.
and yet our good friends in Congress, and it grieves me to say this, Carrie, but some of our good friends in Congress who happen to call themselves Democrats.
Yep.
Got right in line and said, you know, we need us some bankruptcy reform, because all these
people are going bankrupt.
Yes.
So we don't let them do that anymore.
But
they can go bankrupt, but they just have to keep paying their debt.
Right, but you'll notice they didn't reform corporate bankruptcy.
No.
Couldn't do that. Wouldn't be American.
Wouldn't be American, because that would, like, you know, sometimes businesses fail. Now, we can't admit that the reason the businesses fail is because they're run badly or because somebody makes decisions that are set up and intended to run that company into the ditch.
They wouldn't do that, would they?
Yeah, they would. And they make sure they get theirs first.
Sure.
And then they shut it down, and they move on to the next place. They go start the next company.
Yes.
Or they're a CEO. And, you know, they become sort of like CEOs for hire, and they move over to somebody else's corporation.
Yeah, one day you're a CEO for a car manufacturer. The next day you're a CEO of a cosmetics firm.
And it's all sort of the same. You make things. And they tell you, now, if I tried to go to work from one company to the other, they tell me that my skills didn't transfer. But they get high enough up, well, they're just, you know, running corporate capital and running people, and they're absolutely great at that.
Yeah, don't have to know how to make the widgets.
No, absolutely not.
Well, you know, this all brings me, and I hope you can forgive that I couldn't do a linear conversation to save my life. It brings me back around to something, and it brings me back to the issue of labor. As far as I can tell, and I fancy myself a student of history, virtually every good thing that we consider civilized about this nation has been a function of activity on the part of working people.
That would be correct.
from the 1860s and workers who said 8 hours a day for the company, 8 hours a day for sleep, and 8 hours a day for whatever we want.
Right.
Yeah, that's the beginning of that fight. The women's suffrage had support within labor.
Right.
The UMWA began from its very first days. It was an integrated union because everybody turns black down
right.
in that hole.
Right.
Every good thing has happened as a function of the dedication of working people. I fear that somewhere along the way, and I define it as a certain amount of militancy, I fear that we lost that militancy.
I think we didn't lose the militancy so much as we lost the empowerment to understand that we could do something about it.
Okay.
So people got the idea that they couldn't change it. It was so much bigger than they are. It is so much more absolutely out of control, something you just can't change.
Well, what's happened in this country when, for instance, and this just burnt me up, when the transit workers went on strike in New York City,
mm-hmm.
they were jailed.
Yes.
So the message there is that as a human being who happens to do the work.
Correct.
You no longer in this country have the right to withhold your labor?
That is correct.
Now, I know George is all into an ownership society and stuff, but that's taken it a little too far in my book.
And that's a state law back there in New York State that they are absolutely stuck with. But what starts to happen is that you don't own yourself and the right to
yes.
bid out for the highest possible bidder the price of what you'll be paid for the work you do.
I thought that was the free market.
No, that would be the free market if we had free market for workers. But we have the free market for corporations.
Then it's not free.
No, it is not free.
I mean, I'm not trying to...
And they are going to try and drive down the price of what you can get for your labor, what the level of work is. That's why right now the minimum wage is buying power is down below what it was, buying power, what you can actually
right.
live with on it, down below what it was in 1971.
It's at a 50-year low.
Correct.
Now, with that, okay, you've taken me to the minimum wage. Very fair. I watched the progress of the minimum wage bill through Congress and stood there with the little hairs on the back of my neck standing straight up because it seemed like somebody was missing something. Because considering what you just described, and we know that what the Republicans did, or as I call them from time to time, Republicans, we know that what they did was a dog and pony show. You know, when you've got to tie the Paris Hilton tax cut to a $2 raise in the minimum wage, we know you're not serious about it.
Right.
But even if the tax cut wasn't there, we're still talking about a $2 raise in the minimum wage that's going to take 2 or 3 years to implement.
Correct.
Who among us is silly enough to think that that is adequate?
No one I know. Clearly what we need to do is index it to inflation.
Sure.
So that we don't have this fight ever again. We bring it up, we make it work, and we tie it so it goes up on its own. You don't hear us fighting anymore about how much the poor pensioners on Social Security receive, right?
Right.
Because we used to have that problem. The Social Security payments were locked in at a dollar amount, and inflation went up, and you know, all you could do was offer grandma recipes for dog food.
And any change had to be done manually, so to speak.
Exactly, and it had to be a fight. So we've indexed it to inflation. They make the announcement that as of January 1, the amount will go up 5.2%. And grandma knows that while the price of gasoline and heating oil is going up, at least her payment is going to go up too.
Right.
We need to do that with the minimum wage. But first we have to go back and look at either a living minimum wage or something we fought for a long time in California, the moral minimum wage.
Well, that was my next question. The question was the difference between a minimum wage and a living wage. And of course, you know, whether it's minimum wage, workers' compensation, unemployment, again, all those good things that happened because of dedicated, hardworking men and women of organized labor. Is this a fight that you guys are ready to, is this a torture ready to have and carry again?
I think we really are, but you got to remember that there are a few things that we need that we don't have that
sure.
are causing us such an incredible level of pain mm-hmm. amongst ourselves as a union movement.
Yes.
I was born in 1953.
Okay.
Unfortunately, as a union official, union density in this country peaked about the year I was born.
True.
And because our density and our power is going down, and it's going down because of specific things being done by the federal government, and in some places state governments as well, depending on what group we're trying to organize, our ability to organize is so hamstrung, we can't fight the fight for the minimum wage, which is generally for people other than us. Because
right.
we know we need to raise all boats on the tide.
Certainly.
So that our fight is not just that I try to get minimum wage for somebody at the bargaining table. Minimum wage is already there. It's good. You can live on it. Now let's talk about I'm going to get your bread and roses above that.
Sure.
But the reality is that right now our ability to organize is so compressed, so fought back. If I told you that in this country it's perfectly legal to lock people in a room and yell at them and hold a captive meeting to tell them why unions are bad, would you think that was legal?
Sadly, yes.
It is.
Unfortunately,
it is. So we have organizing drives where we're trying to organize an industry. We're trying to make people's lives better. People say, well, why don't unions organize? You know, they're just all those fat cat union officials. They just sit around. They don't want to organize.
Yeah,
you know, we want to organize. We're trying to organize. We're going out and telling people why it is better to band together and work together to increase their wages, hours, and working conditions. Then, of course, if I look at a room full of 9 people who are going to be organized, I have to realize that at least one of them will be fired, lose their job during that organizing drive. That's against the law.
Sure.
But they will lose their job.
And there's no real remedy to it because...
Oh, there's a remedy. You file an unfair labor practice charge, and in a few months you'll get a decision, and you might even win.
And then they appeal.
They appeal to the full National Labor Relations Board. I call it the Roach Motel. The cases go in, and they never come out.
Sure.
So because they had a real problem during that first Bush-Reagan administration way back then where they weren't... I mean, the cases would go in, and they wouldn't come out for 8 years. So now, once a year, they have to publish a list of how many cases they're late on. So right now, it's September, coming up on late September, and a rush of cases is about to come out because they have to report on October 1 how many cases they got sitting in the hopper.
Some of those are the Kentucky River cases.
Of course, and here comes Kentucky River taking away the right to organize from nurses. It's going to hit me in the newspaper industry. Because they're going to say, oh, you're an editor. Now, this is not editor, you know, like the second guy right under the publisher. This is a newspaper like the Washington Post that has hundreds of editors.
Sure.
These are not people who are supervisors. They do not hire anybody. They do not fire anybody, and they certainly don't discipline anybody. But they are people who are going to be, we're going to be hearing, they have to come out of the bargaining unit. You can't represent them anymore because we know Kentucky River's going to come down ugly. There is just no way. I mean, you know, the NLRB ferry might help me out, but it's just not likely that we're going to win any of those cases.
Right.
Set up, it's been worked this way, and we are going to watch that attack. It's like the attack that we had on overtime a couple of years ago.
Sure.
Now, that attack on overtime, and you may remember that the Department of Labor was actually going out and telling people, no, it's okay. We know that it says you got to pay overtime to these, like, supervisors, you know, those supervisors over at the McDonald's because they're going to be management. But, you know, because they only make about $15,000 a year, they're on the bottom end of that scale, so you're actually going to have to pay them overtime. But it's okay. Just increase their base pay, and then you can claim that you gave them more money, but you won't have to spend any more. You're out of pocket. It'll be just the same. Here's the way to get around this law.
Talk about your fuzzy math.
Oh, it's very fuzzy math. And what all of this does, be it the fight at the NLRB, the process that takes so long, I had a case that I worked on for 4.5 years of immigrant workers from China and Taiwan. They publish a Chinese language newspaper in Southern California. And the management was changing how their work was handled, and they got mad, and they decided they wanted a union. And they decided to form a union, and then they came to us. And we said, okay, this is the way you do it. This is, you got to sign some cards. We'll go to an election. And one person who might have been a supervisor one day of the week was in the room when some people signed cards. And 4.5 years later, the National Labor Relations Board voided the election, which had been won by 14 votes. But they had some math that somebody might have been confused, and if they were confused, then we just have to cut out that many winning votes right off the top.
You know, we talked to an elections specialist before you came in here, and it's worth noting that when it comes to counting votes, it's not just what happens every 2 years or every 4 years. The present administration has taken an approach to voting rights across the board. Like I said, symptoms of a much larger disease.
Much larger.
And we've heard stories coming out of Tar Heel, North Carolina, the Southfield Project.
Right.
Where again, it was a case of we don't think you really voted to hold.
You didn't really mean to. You were confused.
Yeah. Well, you need to be clarified. That's what you need to clarify.
Clarify.
This is the clarifyingest administration I think I've ever seen.
So these poor folks, you know, from Taiwan, and they really believed in the American dream, and that was probably the hardest thing I had to do with these people for years, was tell them that they said, but we won. You know, they counted the ballots, and we won, and we'll get our union, and the National Labor Relations Board will rule in our favor. And that case went into the Roach Motel, and it was there for years. So on its second birthday, I sent it a birthday cake. Happy birthday, 21RC2184. And, you know, two candles. I wrote happy birthday in Chinese. You know, I can draw pretty well.
Very nice.
And they said, you can't bring that in here. That's a protest. And the folks bring it in and said, no, that's a case. We know that the case is in here, and it's probably pretty lonely because we think, they probably think that we forgot it, and we just wanted to know that we know it's his birthday, and happy birthday. Well, the next year, it was turning three. So I got a lot of birthday cards, you know, happy three-year-old, Thomas the Tank, and some Disney cards, happy, I'm three today. And I had thousands of people sign cards saying happy birthday to the case. And I each member of the National Labor Relations Board got 5 or 6 cards, you know, 1,000 signatures, saying please tell 21RC2184 happy third birthday, because we know that it's in there. I did hear that the head of the National Labor Relations Board said something about he was coming out with that decision before that woman does something else on its fourth birthday. And they did. It came out about 2 weeks before the birthday, and I was cooking up, because for four, oh, we could have fun for a four-year-old birthday.
Tricycles. Exactly. Well, what kind of a result?
That was where they said, well, somebody, so you've got to vote again. Now, they had spent, as an employer, in the vicinity of $750,000 to $1 million a year, every year, harassing the union leadership, fighting them, downgrading them, taking away their bonuses, fighting us at the National Labor Relations Board, cases that were hung up for years. In fact, the administrative law judge started the trial when it finally started after 2.5 years and said, I'm really sorry, justice delayed is justice denied, and I know that. And then the trial started.
And it kept getting delayed,
and it took so long, and when we finally got some of the decisions down, they said, well, all of those first part things, you know, you're really right. You absolutely were mistreated. But we can't help you on those, or we can't help you on those because you have to be certified as the union to represent, so we go back to the first election part thing.
Jesus.
And I had to convince these people who had left communist China to come to the United States thinking that they were in a place with the rule of law, that, you know, and
it's embarrassing.
It was pretty seriously embarrassing because I had to keep telling them that I understood they had won, that the chances were that they were going to lose at the National Labor Relations Board.
Because we started this conversation with you know, there's real inspiration in this city. And the Washington Monument means something. And the Jefferson Memorial means something. The Lincoln Memorial means something. The hill means something. And you take people who literally live communist China and you tell them, no.
I'm really sorry, but the corporation will win here. And it was really embarrassing because the Secretary of Labor, Ms. Chow.
Oh, yes.
She's from Taiwan.
Yes, I know.
And they really thought that you know, she was Taiwanese. She would recognize that they had lost their rights and that they had been improperly treated, and
sure,
that she would come to their aid.
Yeah.
And we had to try and explain that her husband is Mitch McConnell and a very conservative senator who doesn't believe in labor rights of any kind and was at the time proposing in the Senate things to take away the rights of working people. So this takes us all the way back to why we talked about this to begin with.
Yeah.
And what it's about is the labor movement is working so hard on surviving, on protecting our members, on just getting by, that, yes, we are working on electing different people, and we are putting in those extra couple hours and extra dollars and all of that to try and elect a new majority to take back the House and, please God, the Senate while we're at it, while I am patiently waiting to take back the White House.
Yeah, I want my house back.
Uh-huh.
And if you can get to Congress, then obviously job one for you becomes the Employees
Free Choice Act, because we need to have the right to win an election, to just have a fair and balanced opportunity to have an election
sure.
and let people decide.
Yeah.
Because realistically, people want to do better. They'd rather do better altogether
mm-hmm.
than just trying to get ahead, walking one over the body of their coworker to try and get ahead by themselves.
Tough traveling on a road of bones.
It really is. And realistically, we see all of these things that have to happen, but we've got to have the right to survive as a union,
well,
as a union movement.
Yeah, and the fact is, I saw one study that said 57 million Americans have said that if they had the opportunity, if they knew that they weren't going to lose their job, if they knew they weren't going to be taken into a room and screamed at for heaven's sakes, if they knew that they weren't going to lose benefits or be punished, they'd join a union in a minute.
Absolutely they would. And why not? The idea of working together to improve your wages, hours, and working conditions makes great good sense.
Yes.
But, you know, there are international labor rights. Did you know there are 8 of them?
I didn't know there were 8, but I knew they existed.
And things like the right not to be discriminated against, and the right not to have slavery, and the right not to have child labor, or the worst forms of child labor.
Fundamental freedom of association.
That would be the basic stuff. Now, you know, the right to form unions?
Mm-hmm.
It was promulgated internationally in 1948. And I know up there in Congress, they just forgot to pass it.
Right. Slip their mind.
Of these 8, the United States has passed 2. They involve the slavery and the worst forms of child labor thing.
But everything else is okay.
Everything else, well, we don't need those things, you know? Now,
we're America.
We're America. And that's why we don't have labor law. We don't have it passed as part of our Constitution as a basic labor right that we would know that we could count on it, and we wouldn't have to be trying to get people to co-sponsor the Employee Free Choice Act because we would already have it as a right.
Yeah, so maybe next time we get around to amending the Constitution because we're not so sure we like what two people do when the lights go out. Well, maybe we can add some human associational rights, labor rights.
To actually get together and figure out what we want to do. Do you know how many of those 8 basic labor rights they had passed in Saddam Hussein's Iraq?
All 8?
Yes, sir.
That's amazing. Carrie, we've got to stop. Carrie Biggs Adams, what a joy this conversation has been.
Thank you.
I hope we'll hear from you again somewhere down the road.
Absolutely.
And please go with our best wishes.
I just do want to tell you one thing. Today is day 67 of the Troops Home Fast, and it's been 67
you
days.
You have not eaten in 67 days.
That is correct.
How are you holding up?
Just great.
Okay.
Fruit juice and water.
My gracious.
A cup of coffee and the occasional cup of beer.
There's so many things we should have hit. Like I said, we'll break this down. We'll go back home. I'll give you a call. I want you to come back. And I want you to share the message some more.
Absolutely.
Carrie Biggs Adams, thank you very kindly.
You are very welcome.
Bring the troops home.
Absolutely.
Troops home fast. Take care.
Absolutely.
It is time for a break. We're going to come back and take some of your phone calls if you'd like. You know, this is Conversation Radio, and the telephone works, too. You know how to reach us, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A new report says pre-war intelligence gathered before the U.S. invaded Iraq never indicated a link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. In fact, the Senate Intelligence Committee report says Saddam viewed al-Qaeda as a threat. The report also says the U.S. relied on false information provided by an anti-Saddam group whose credibility U.S. intelligence agents questioned. However, they still use that information from the group that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. In Afghanistan today, a suicide bomber plowed into a convoy of U.S. military vehicles, killing 18 people, including two American soldiers. Two GIs were among the 29 people wounded. It was the worst terrorist attack there since the U.S. invasion 5 years ago. In Warsaw, representatives from all 26 NATO member states are meeting to discuss bringing more troops to Afghanistan. NATO's top commander says the next few weeks will be crucial to defeating the Taliban. In Iraq, an American soldier was killed today in a roadside bombing near Baghdad. At least 8 Shiite pilgrims were also killed in Karbala. In Lebanon today, Israel lifted its naval blockade. Ships from Greece, Italy, and France are now patrolling the coastline. That comes a day after Israel lifted its air blockade, allowing airplanes to travel into and out of Beirut. On Capitol Hill, some Republicans and top military officers are worried about the legality of President Bush's proposal to use military commissions to try terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay. They're working on a different proposal that would give defendants more rights. The FDA has fined the American Red Cross more than $4 million. The agency says that's because the organization failed to ask required questions of blood donors and did not follow correct testing procedures. In Washington, Homeland Security says foreign visitors will now have all 10 fingers printed when they enter the U.S. Those prints will then be compared to those found near terrorist attack sites around the world. Machines to read the prints will be installed at border crossings within the next 2 years. Air traffic controllers who take naps during their breaks could now face 10-day suspensions. The new FAA rules were issued in response to the deadly crash of a Calm Air flight in Kentucky. And Tropical Storm Florence continues to gain strength. Forecasters say it could reach hurricane status this weekend, but poses no threat to the U.S. mainland.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price, the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Hewlett-Packard's chairwoman is admitting the company's investigation into media leaks could have been done differently. New reports say investigators not only accessed board members' phone records, but also reporters' phone records. U.S. and European security officials are meeting in Brussels. An agreement to share information about air travelers expires at the end of September, but they're working on a deal to continue that practice. A federal judge has temporarily blocked a plan to allow oil development on 600,000 acres in Alaska. Environmentalists say the government didn't consider the impact of development on wetlands area. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration has some new regulations. Crash test dates will have to be included on new vehicle window stickers by next September. Ford Motor is paying its new CEO more than $18 million to join the company. Alan Mulally will also receive 600,000 restricted stock units. And OPEC will likely decide to keep its oil production at the current level when it meets next week. That's because any cuts would raise prices even higher, and most members are already producing at maximum levels. Light sweet crude settled today at $66.25. At the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was up 61 points at 11,392. NASDAQ up 10 points at 2166. S&P 500 up 5 points at 1299. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour, you're listening to a very, very special broadcast of Head On with me, Bob Kincaid, preceded by my good friend and fellow traveler in the fight to save America, Bruce Birch, seated here next to me, broadcasting live from the mall, the very shadow of the Washington Monument at Camp Democracy. There's some music going on in the background. This is an amazing time, an amazing place. And as I've said earlier, I believe the change begins here. Bruce, what have your impressions been so far?
Oh, man, this is terrible. This whole event has just been terrible.
Awful. Heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking. I wanted to mention someone, though, who is kind of the most valuable player in this whole effort out here.
Yeah, this is the coolest story.
What happens, Bob? You're the story spinner.
Well, I like to think that maybe we've got a little bit to do with this. I like to think that this is an amazing positive reflection, not just on personal character, but upon the kind of folks that choose to share their time with us on the Head On Radio Network. Our good friend Steady flew out here, and no one here at Camp Democracy knew he was coming. No one expected him. And I've had three or four people come up to me today and say, if you want to get something done, if you want something to happen, and they point at Steady and they say, tell him. That's the hardest working guy in this compound. And you know, he's proven it. He's all over the place. He's going, he's doing, he's helping. And it's amazing and it's inspiring.
Yes, it is absolutely inspiring, and I got to tell you, what's more inspiring about that than that is that he came over and sat down a minute ago and said, "Hey, are you guys hungry?"
That always helps.
He ran off and got us some sort of pastries. It's just really amazing pastries.
I haven't gotten into mine yet, but it's
going to be. I just got into mine.
I know. That's why I
that's what, that's why I told you to tell the story.
Yeah, right? I know.
I got him good, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, yes, I sure did. I do want to also sort of bring to your attention that probably, I guess tomorrow, they're going to be moving Camp Democracy from where it is in its present location down to closer to the Capitol,
right,
on the National Mall. So if you are coming in here for the weekend, do not come to the monument. Probably the best thing is to go middle way of between the Capitol and the monument. It should be in that location. But it's been really neat. We've had Veterans for Peace here. We've had Code Pink. We've had voting rights and voting elections folks. And right now there's a concert going on. Some guys are playing some music under the main tent. And our good friend Steady is actually hanging out right in front of me. He just came back. He kind of flits around, you know, because, you know, he's like the MVP of Camp Democracy, you know.
That was the exact phrase that was used, MVP of Camp Democracy.
When there is something that needs to be done, you know what they do? They go, where's that guy with that funny hat?
I dig the hat.
He did. Oh, man. So it's been a wonderful time, Bob. But, we've had our little interesting moments.
Yeah,
with this tonight.
Look, you know, we operate with cutting-edge technology, and sometimes when you operate on the cutting edge, you get cut. You know, so that kind of, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sometimes happen. You fall off the edge. Anyway, we do have an interview for you coming up very soon. Her name is... Oh, gosh, the card flew away, Bob.
You lost the card.
Sally Castleman.
Yes.
Sally Castleman, who is a national chairperson of the Election Defense Alliance. We will be talking to her in just a few moments. The other thing, too, to keep in mind is that as the night wears on, we're going to try to up our bandwidth a little bit. We'll see if that happens or not, but... We'll have different folks on, and at some point Bob and I will just get, you know, go to the doing the monologue thing, and maybe we might even do a comedy show. I'm not quite sure yet, but we were discussing that last night.
A guy walks into a bar.
Okay, that sounds like the beginning of a joke, and that in most cases a very bad one. All right, joining me right now is Sally Castleman. She's the national chairperson of the Election Defense Alliance. And Sally is here at Camp Democracy. Absolutely, I'm positive she is here to make a difference in election law and demanding paper ballots, et cetera. I'm really, really glad that you could join me this afternoon or this evening now that the darkness has fallen in D.C. So, Sally, welcome to the show. Hang on a second, please.
Oh, I say thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'm glad to have you. I'm glad to have you on the program. Tell me a little bit about the Election Defense Alliance.
Well, there's incredibly wonderful work going on at the grassroots level around the country, especially since the 2004 election. There are a lot of election reform groups that have formed. And the vitality really is in the grassroots.
Uh-huh.
However, a lot of the groups are... acting somewhat isolated, or reinventing a wheel that's already been invented here and then there and then here, and a lot of duplication of effort. There's not enough sharing of resources,
mm-hmm.
And Election Defense Alliance was formed to foster more coordination and more cooperation amongst the various grassroots groups.
So your job, or you see, your organization is actually going to pull together a number of these groups to try to have a unified front in the battle for free and fair election.
That's right. A more organized front, because as a whole we will have a much better impact than a group in Philly announcing something and a group in Dallas announcing something. If everything happens together, we can get pressed together, it'll be much more impactful.
Absolutely. Now, what are you guys working on aside from building an alliance and building coalitions and community among these groups? What are some of the steps that folks can take right now to for the elections this November?
Okay. Well, there's two things.
Uh-huh.
first of all, I just want to talk for a minute about Election Defense Alliance, which is, has its own website, www.electiondefensealliance.org. And we're organized by what we're calling working groups, so that people from different parts of the country who are working on, let's say, legislation, can all work on legislation, be in touch with one another by email or mostly by conference call. So, for instance, if somebody writes a really good piece of legislation that's needed around this issue, this group together, the Working Group on Legislation, can turn it into a more generic template and disperse it out all over the country. So any group that's going to need something along these lines can tweak it and tailor it for their own locale, but not have to start from scratch.
Sure, sure.
And not only the legislation itself, but also all the steps involved. If it's for a referendum, do you start here, do you start there, do you get the signatures before you do this, or, you know, all the different steps to it, as well as the legislation itself. That's just one example. So that's how Election Defense Alliance is organized, and groups can affiliate, but also individuals who maybe don't have a group in their area who would like to be involved in election reform activities can say, well, gee, I have some legal expertise. I can work on with a litigation group as an individual and help wherever I'm needed. So people can go to the website and sign up to do work, as well as get... It's a very good source of all kinds of information about the issues.
So that's electiondefensealliance.org.
Right.
electiondefensealliance.org.
Right.
Now, some of the things that people can do this November.
Okay. So November, of course, is bearing down on us, and we feel that there have been too many elections where the candidates we elect are not the ones who are sworn into office. There's been much too much fraud, both electronically and through disenfranchisement and through gerrymandering.
Sure,
We're primarily working on the front around electronic fraud. And we've seen, you had Steve Freeman on a little while ago. He probably talked about all kinds of cases.
Sure.
Where that just puts your hair on end. And he said to me, people keep talking about it because they're endless stories and there's, you know, more and more to tell, but I'd rather talk about something else. But we are focusing on the electronic fraud aspect of it. But where I started was saying, this has been going on for a very long time. It didn't start in 2000. It didn't start in 2004. And nobody is standing up against it in any effective way, and we feel like we, the people, really must do something to gain control, regain control of our elections.
Mm-hmm.
They've been corporatized. Our vote, we were meant to vote in secret, we weren't meant to count in secret, and our votes are being counted by corporations with no scrutiny, no public scrutiny,
right.
Most electronically, on equipment that we know is very, very vulnerable to corruption. And so we need to stand up to that.
Absolutely.
And we've decided that the way to handle the election this November is by targeting particular races and organizing masses of people, and that's partly why we're here at Camp Democracy, to get the word out. What we want to do is we want to organize people around various functions.
Okay.
And one of them, I'm only going to talk about a couple of them, but there are many, many. And there's another website as well as Election Defense Alliance, and that's Election Defense Action. And that one is focused specifically on this November's election, electiondefenseaction.org.
Electiondefenseaction.org, okay.
Right. And... But the two parts that I'll talk about for a minute are the part that has to do with running some exit polls. I think Steve talked about how exit polls really can be accurate, but they can also get twisted and changed.
Sure.
And the spin put on them can also discredit them. And we know we'll be discredited, but regardless of who runs them, but they will provide some basic data about what really has gone on in the
election, right.
Yeah. And so we will train bodies of people to actually carry out the election, the exit polls. And we will have a Zogby or a Harris actually write the poll. I mean, we're not going to just make it up out of thin air. We're going to make sure it's professionally done and that the process meets their professional standards. And if we, just a little sidetrack here, if we, between now and then, could be so fortunate as to find some donors who are willing to give us money in the millions, we will hire a Zogby or a Harris to run these polls. And the media will not own them, we will own them, and they will be honestly dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, so one thing is to get the data, and then Election Defense Alliance has one of its operations will do instant data analysis on the, quote, official outcomes. If we have exit polls, they'll run it against exit polls. If not, they'll run it against historical data. And we'll know very, very quickly whether the results of the announced result of an election is a yes confidence vote or a no confidence vote. And if it's a no confidence vote, the word will go back to the activists who are at that location, and they will announce for public, appropriate public action. And we're thinking of calling people into the streets, like the Ukraine, like Mexico. Maybe we'll ask them to go to the county seat. Maybe we'll ask them to go in front of the newspaper office, depending on what we're talking about in terms of a city, a rural area. It will vary, but we'll make it clear where people should go.
Sure.
And demand the truth, because if we don't take it into our hands, it's not happening.
Right. And that's just it, is that, I think for 4 years, we have, or at least 5 years now, there's been a concerted effort to steal elections in this country, and the majority of folks have laid down about it and have not been willing to stand up and go to the streets. Because the reality is that, you know, we have had a democracy here for a long, 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 long time. And people, I think, have gotten complacent.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. It can't happen here. We're the democracy.
Exactly.
How could it happen here? We're the mob.
We're the one that people, you know, everyone around the world supposedly looks to us, you know.
Yes.
Well, we think they do.
They used to.
Right.
Now
they're like, hey, how can we support puppet dictators?
Yeah.
Let's look to the United States.
Yeah. Pretty sad.
Yeah.
Pretty sad. And also a lot of people really don't know because the mainstream media has apparently been complicit in this.
Absolutely.
The word has not gone out. I mean,
I
come from Massachusetts, and I talk to people in Massachusetts, which is known to be a fairly progressive place, and they look at me and they say, Sally, you know, I know you, and you're a credible person, and you make sense, but come on, wouldn't I have read this somewhere? I mean, they don't believe that the elections have been stolen, or that even 04, even Ohio was stolen. I mean, people do not, the word is not going out. Wouldn't I have read it somewhere? Wouldn't I have heard it on television, on the radio?
Well, it depends. Let's see, do you watch Fox News? Probably not. Sally, what kinds of other stuff do you guys involve in?
What kinds of other stuff like?
You're here today. How long are you going to be here at Camp Democracy?
Well, we actually, Election Defense Alliance is sponsoring Thursday's program.
Oh, okay. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish we were going to be here for that. We were basically here for the day, but.
And on Friday evening, this is filmed by an award-winning filmmaker, Dorothy Fadiman, and she has a film that's just going to be debuting. Is that an appropriate verb?
Premiering.
Yeah. She's premiering her film on Friday evening here. It's called Stealing America, One Vote at a Time.
Wow.
And it's absolutely about the 2004 election and all of this whole issue.
Well, I certainly hope that's going to get wide. I hope that at least activists will get it out there and get some wide distribution. So you are at, the electiondefensealliance.org. You have a telephone number also. I'm going to go ahead and read it.
No, we don't have a telephone
number. Oh, you don't? Okay. So people can just go to your website if they want to get in touch with you or make a donation or anything.
Absolutely.
So.
And if anybody has suggestions of resources for money, that would be incredible. Or Some people may have contacts with foundations who like to fund public policy kinds of issues like this to make sure that our democracy stays a democracy. We would love to hear about some of those contacts.
Sure.
And definitely donations and definitely bodies, especially for November 7th.
Well, we'll do everything we can to help you get the information. We'll get a link up on our website with your website address and also, you know, keep your cards so that we can get back in touch with you as we get closer to November if there's any specific actions you would like for people to get involved in.
Thank you. And thank you for having a program like this. This is amazing to find a relatively new station that's doing the kind of work that you guys are doing.
Well, you know, we're building something that there's a huge gap. And, you know, now you can interview me.
Yes.
No, but there is a huge gap out there in radio land for realistic.
Yes.
Radio, where we can sit down and have a 20-minute conversation about issues that matter to millions of people,
right.
You know, and not be interrupted by, you know, strange ads for Swedish mattresses and whatever it is that they're trying to, you know. I'm glad that you appreciate it. If you want, you know, head on radionetwork.com is how you get to us. So
Great.
Glad to have you on board today and really appreciate it.
I really appreciate that you're talking about the real stuff and not what passes for quote news. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for joining me.
And good luck to all of us.
All right.
Our nation.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Sally, thanks so much. And that was Sally Castleman, who is the national chairperson of the Election Defense Alliance. Now, you can check out her website by going to electiondefensealliance.org. And drop her a donation there. They're trying to get off the ground, and they're trying to do some good stuff and building some confidence around elections and creating a new reality for our democracy. So thank you, Sally, and I certainly wish you the best of luck in all of your endeavors in creating a new reality for our elections. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, who knows what might happen? You know, George is out of town, so the smell went away.
I think I saw Marine One a little early.
Oh, yeah, you think you did? Okay, well, maybe he's in town. At any rate, it's about 25 minutes past the hour here on the Head On Radio Network. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. This is Bruce Birch.
I'm Bob Kincaid.
We'll be right back.
No space to rent in this town. You're out of luck. And the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. And you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. With a possible strike hanging in the air, Northwest Airlines is recalling all of its furloughed flight attendants. Jesse Russell has more.
Facing a spike in sick leaves, attrition, and possibly in anticipation of a ruling by an appeals court judge, Northwest has called up 1,131 flight attendants currently on both voluntary and involuntary furloughs. Starting September 30th, the attendants are expected to fill permanent vacancies. A strike at Northwest Airlines was set to begin late last month after a bankruptcy court judge ruled that it was legal. The airline appealed the ruling, and U.S. District Court Judge Victor Marrero blocked the walkouts until he makes a decision. That decision could come at any time. The strike would come in the form of targeted walkouts on random flights. The Association of Flight Attendants are encouraging passengers to sign up for strike alerts on their website.
On Saturday, the AFL-CIO begins its largest midterm election door-to-door get-out-the-vote effort. In over 80 locations in 21 states, activists will be working the doors, talking to union members about issues like jobs, health care, retirement security, and the freedom to form unions. Ohio is the most recent state to try to break the 10-year stagnation of the federal minimum wage. This week, a state constitutional amendment that would set Ohio's minimum at $6.85 per hour was placed on the November ballot. Ohio is the sixth state Ohio is the sixth state to have such an amendment in front of voters on Election Day. Currently, the state minimum wage is the federal wage of $5.15 per hour. Michael Punk's new book, Fire and Brimstone, tells the story of the 1917 North Butte mining disaster. It also weaves a sociological tale of how workers and their unions were divided by corporate domination of politics and the media in a time of war. Punk says that's a very modern story for workers, and there are lessons there for today's labor activists.
The main thing that I hope is that people from the labor world will look at this book and really view it as a case study in how unions get beat. And in reading that and in looking at the lessons of 1917, I think there's a lot of instructive material there for thinking about the politics of labor unions today.
Fire and Brimstone is the story of America's worst mining disaster. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
The rat race is quickly becoming an arms race of work hours. A recent article in the Washington Post finds that those who are willing to work the most hours tend to make out better when it comes to promotions and raises. The reason, Cornell sociologist Maren E. Clarksburg told the Post, is that we are living in an increasingly intangible world where it is hard to measure worker output. Therefore, it has become more tempting to measure output in terms of work hours, even if it means that person working more hours isn't necessarily more qualified.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bob Kincaid, seated next to Bruce Birch as we bring you the activities, the very, very serious beginning of dialogue, and the camaraderie and common cause that has been formed here at Camp Democracy on the Washington Monument end of the National Mall here in Washington, D.C. If you want to get involved with the program, we will be...
We'll be taking phone calls for about the next 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, 15, 20 minutes or so, 877-443-2366. What's on your mind? Among other things, you know, there's...
Is that me?
No.
Oh.
No, we know what's on your mind.
Hey, that's not nice.
there's a lot of stuff that's gone on in the world today that we haven't touched, we haven't addressed. And, just because this is our agenda right now doesn't necessarily mean that we can't talk about other stuff. Now, I heard, Bruce, I heard you mentioning earlier that the Bolton nomination is...
I hate that majestic, noble, royal, gracious United Nations.
Oh, I hate that rabbit. Yes, John Bolton, at this time it's not George Babyface Crocodile Tears Voinovich, it's actually Lincoln Chafee.
Who is scared to death because he's got some significant competition coming up in November.
I'm going to tell you what, if he was in my district, if he was in my state, I would run to the right of him too.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, what are you talking about? Let's see. Let's go to the phones. Chris is joining us from Northwest Alabama. Chris, are you with us?
I'm with us.
Hey.
C-U-I. I tell you, you've missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
The new legislation about killing off the horses that Bo Derek kind of had.
Oh, for God's sake.
I read that in the newspaper this morning, Chris.
Okay.
And the headline in the Washington Post said, how did they put it? It said the senators come up short in horse race or something like this.
Yeah.
Really stupid. But.
Okay. Bill Frist is very, very excited that they're only talking about horses. So now he can get his free mailings of kittens while on the campaign trail. And I can see a corporate thing with Walmart, or maybe with IAM, where they're going to mail him out cat food on the campaign trail. Maybe to Hartfield's Landing, I don't know. So he can keep his cat thing going on the campaign trail, not just at home or in Washington. So, you know.
He's a sick puppy.
He really is. How sick is he, Bob?
I got it. He's so sick. He had the IAM's pet food company make a special cat food flavor just for him. It's called Old Puppy Blood. It's called Robert Novak Cat Food.
Oh, God, you're awful.
And on the picture, it's got a picture of him and Novak embracing, and they're standing and sitting in between them is Strom Thurmond.
Cup Novakula.
Oh, yeah.
I learned it from Richard Armitage.
Who, by the way, takes responsibility but doesn't really take responsibility.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, kind of.
They're still
I apologize.
Working.
I'm not criminally liable anymore.
So if you can actually secure the label on some of those cans from the campaign, they're working on what you're going to win if you mail them in. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. Of course not.
Oh. Yeah, see, I thought you were first.
No, Bruce isn't used to you, Chris.
Oh, okay.
You need to call my show, man, during 5 to 7, you know, that way I can get used to your wacky sense of humor.
I have a blog that I write, and Bob's posted some stories there that have just been incredible. And I would write fake conversations that Bush would have with Karl Rove and Cheney and everybody. And I would read them on the air, and Bob would go, "Really? They said that?" And I was, "No, man, this is what I made up." And I
what are you
doing
that, dumbass? No, that's just how sick it is now,
yeah,
Chris.
I stopped doing it when some of the things I wrote came true. I was so sickened that that I was actually thinking like these people, I gave it up.
Yeah. Stunning.
It was
you doing okay down that way, Chris?
Yeah, pretty much. The local police captain that I told you about, who said he was innocent of child porn,
yeah,
he pled guilty.
Yeah, he's going up the river, isn't he?
Well, just imagine what happens to cops in jail. Now imagine what happens to kitty porn cops in jail. Oh, yeah, he's going up a river,
can you,
of course.
Yeah, can you say, parquet?
I mean, has anybody sent him his complimentary soap on a rope?
His squeeze toy's already got bite marks in it.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. If that's a choice that he wants to make, it's fine. But you know something, Chris? You know, these people who exploit these children deserve three levels of hell. They really do. I mean, because you know, kids are just, you know, they don't have a choice in these matters. And for a cop to do that, those kids are going to, they're going to resent authority for the rest of their lives.
Well, Bruce, this is the guy that burst in your door and says freeze.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know?
No kidding.
You know?
I don't know if he's a Baptist or not,
Bob.
I didn't find out.
Well, you know, Chris, there's a bunch of Department of Homeland Security agents that also got nabbed doing kind of nefarious things, either with children or scoping them out, or you know, different things like that too.
Yeah, there was one guy that worked for Homeland Security they caught in the Dateline scandal.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, I mean, you know, there's a place. Well, trust me, there's a place for prisons in this world.
Dateline.
Dateline. Hey, Chris, thanks so much. Good to hear from you, man. Call again soon, okay?
All righty, y'all take care. All right.
Okay. Bye now.
We've got another caller. Thanks so much, Chris, for calling in. We've got another caller, David, our good friend David from Maine. Wait a minute. Here we go. There's David from Maine. Hi, David.
Hey.
David.
Yes.
How's it going, man?
Yeah, it's going good. I can hear you guys somewhat clearly. Are you guys walking around on location, or are you guys actually just set up in the tent?
Actually, what we're doing is we're just switching back and forth in the chairs.
We've been doing some moving around, that kind of stuff, you know.
You don't have any headsets. You don't have any Bluetooth technology going.
No. I left my Bluetooth at home. Doggone it.
He's got his green one though.
The only one. Oh.
Sorry, Bob. I didn't mean to tell the
he'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
So what's the reaction there? What's the reaction there on the movie Pathway to 9/11? You guys got a lot of anger there with people.
Most people, you know, it's kind of interesting because, David, it's kind of interesting because the reaction that I've had to Path 9/11 for most of these folks is not really as outraged as I would expect. And I think part of that is due to the fact that there is a certain disconnection here. In other words, that people who are in here in the camp all day really aren't at their computers. They're not watching TV. They're not listening to the radio.
Wow.
So there's a little bit of a disconnection to, you know, to what's happening in real time to the rest of us who are so honed in and tuned into the news that we find out stuff that happens within 5 minutes of it happening.
Right.
You know, so but there are a few people, and I think Bob will probably touch on this, that there are a few people that I have talked to that are just completely outraged about this pack of lies that they're calling a docudrama or a what is it, Bob?
Mockumentary? Jeez.
Do you think ABC's going to pull it?
Say again, please, David.
Do you think ABC is going to pull it?
I don't think. No, I still don't think they will, because there's some sort of a deal with the devil that was made. The thing was a cook job from the beginning. For heaven's sakes, it was written by a wingnut.
Did you?
No, it really was.
Did you see Harvey?
I mean, the fix was in on this.
Did you see Harvey Keitel even backpedaled on it?
No, I didn't see that.
You didn't hear that? He was on CNN Showbiz Live, and they asked him about it, and he said, "So you think there are things that need to be changed?" He goes, "Oh, definitely. That whole movie definitely has to be changed."
Well, I think it should be pulled. And I don't want to censor anybody, but you know, if you're going to put it up as fact, at least deal in facts.
You know what people should watch it as? A conspiracy drama, just like they did the Oliver Stone JFK film. I mean, if you think about it, this is their JFK.
It really is.
Isn't it funny, though, that this is their JFK, and the best thing they can get is a made-for-TV movie?
Well, yeah, and there's such a broad difference in the two camps. Take, for instance, David, Stephen Freeman that was on earlier this evening talking about, you know, what an amazing, I mean, this guy was trained at MIT. He teaches at Penn. And he's done science on voting fraud, on election fraud.
Right.
And yet you try to get the mainstream media to pick up on some of this, it's a conspiracy theory. On the other hand, these goobers at ABC can put up stuff that's made up out of whole cloth. And the right wing says, they just don't want us to get the truth out about Bill Clinton. You know, why is it that that's not a conspiracy theory, but hardcore science and numbers about election fraud is?
Well,
I think it's the media, isn't it?
Well, basically, this is like the conspiracy era we live in. Everything is a conspiracy if you think about it. It's just two or three people.
We're, We're conspiring right now, aren't we, David?
That's what I'm saying. Hey, did you guys hear that they grabbed the Scholastic press kits before they deleted them? They're on the web. I'll send you the link to them.
Oh, do please.
Yeah, I think people should see it just for historical reference.
Yeah.
You mean hysterical reference?
Hysterical reference. There. Yeah, there you go. Definitely. So you don't think the Harry Reid letter and none of that is going to have any impact on ABC? I don't know, guys. Getting close to the wire, they might call it and put it through a Showtime.
Well,
like they did with
actually, the last that I heard on that issue, David, is, and I was, you know, I mean, I try to step on stuff. I just, on the Internet, I read that the Democratic leadership was actually hinting at pulling their broadcasting license. If they ran the movie as it was screened originally, in other words, should the Democratic leadership take power back over the House and have the ability to appoint FCC commissioners that are wholly Democratic to pull ABC's broadcasting license if they run it?
Well, you know, that at least provides a little bit of balance because after all, the religion industry is screaming for CBS's head. And you know, Here's the perfect example. On the one hand, you've got ABC airing this piece of unmitigated fiction.
Right.
And on the other hand, and you know, the right wing says nothing. Oh yeah, the facts gotta get out. On the other hand, you've got CBS who is airing something that it's already aired once before, but this time without the censorship. And the American Family Association, they're going to say dirty words while they're dying. You can't play that on television.
Well, I think I would let it run on TV, but I would put a disclaimer in front of it, or maybe like somebody could just come out and say these events are not, or whatever. I mean, that's what they need to do. They just need to be more sensitive about that issue.
Exactly.
I think they should put it on Showtime.
David, will they? I mean, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's getting close to the wire. They might move it to basic cable. ABC's. I don't know if you guys have seen the actual pictures of the petition of how many people. It's like 6 feet high. Of the petition.
Oh my God.
I mean, I'm serious. Democracy Now. Had some shots of it, and it just shocked me. I was like, wow, they really got the word campaign on it. I also think that the right wing on the radio, they didn't know how to react to how strong a petition was when everybody just was like all-stars on this, basically, like a football team. Because you had Clinton, you had Harry Reid, everybody just, I mean, if they would get behind that on the war effort like they did on a TV series.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Isn't that just the truth?
I'm serious. Think about it.
Oh, no, I know you are. Point very well made, David. Very well made indeed.
You know Harry Reid, in the middle of National Security Conference, this is the thing that he decides to talk about right there. I heard clips of it today, and I was like, if they would only do that about the war.
Oh, I know, you know. And, you know, look, if only we could get 4 hours of congressional debate on, oh, I don't know, instead of horses, the war. Do we have 4 hours of debate on the war, do you think, David?
I have to get your reaction on the cluster bomb bill failing. What do you think? About that?
I think yeah, you heard about it.
You think it's
about the rest of America?
You think cluster bombs are a war crime type of?
Of course they are. They're designed to kill civilians. How can they be anything but a war crime? I tell you, David, I've got to roll on. We've got another guest sitting here that I want to let folks hear from.
Right.
I appreciate all the update because we are kind of out of the loop here.
All right, you have a good weekend.
You too, David. Thanks so much. Take care.
Later.
Bye now. Our good friend David calling from Maine. We're joined right now, and I hope I'm not going to butcher your name. We're joined here by Marla Benoist. And, Bruce, would you turn her microphone on, please? Benoit?
Yeah, Benoit.
Benoit, okay.
That's very close.
No, it's
very
not close.
Close
at all. I should have known. Ms. Benoit, you're from InfoMission?
Yes.
And that's, you're a nonprofit, and you look at, you try to create alternative perspectives for global human rights issues. Fair enough?
We try to provide information, alternative information, as opposed to just the mainstream media perspective.
Well, we're kind of in the same business then.
Yes, we are.
You've got a particular focus this evening, or here at Camp Democracy. You're trying to raise awareness about depleted uranium.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And we've talked a lot. We've talked about it quite a bit on the Head On Radio Network, this program, the other programs. What brings you to the issue?
Well, the first time that I learned about depleted uranium, I was shown photographs of deformed babies in Iraq, and this was in 2003. And, you know, if you've never seen a photograph like that, it's extremely disturbing, and I wanted to know what caused that, how that happened. So I went to a conference in Hamburg in 2003, the Uranium Weapons Conference, and I went there specifically to learn as much as I could about depleted uranium and gather materials that I could then develop a presentation, which is what I offer now. It's a one-hour presentation. It's meant to educate the average public, groups, church groups, universities, students about depleted uranium. I sort of get you this a 101 type presentation.
Do you have a website home?
Yes, I do.
Would you share it with us?
Yeah, sure. It's www.info-mission.org.
Info-mission.org.
Yes.
Is the science sound about the effects of depleted uranium? Is there any debate?
Well, there's actually a lot of debate, but my experience and my contacts in the scientific and medical world around the topic of DU, I feel like I've been very fortunate to meet with what I think are some extremely credible, competent individuals working in this field. And I think that the research they have done is very sound. Now, I'm not an expert myself, but I'm able to analyze and differentiate, I think, between, you know, mediocre research and actual accurate
but the accurate stuff is in fact horrifying.
Well, yes, it is, and for a variety of reasons. But I think, and I was talking about this today to the group here I presented at Camp Democracy, you know, depleted uranium is a very difficult topic because there isn't a quick fix. There isn't something that we can immediately do to either halt the manufacture, easily clean up the depleted uranium that is spread around and contaminating, nor can we treat the people really that have depleted uranium contamination. So it's a very tough, tough topic to get around.
And you know, you mentioned seeing Iraqi babies, but the fact of the matter is that it is not a localized issue. We used depleted uranium extensively in Kosovo. We used it in the first Gulf War. It's in the nature of that particular metal that it aerosolizes upon being fired from a weapon.
Exactly.
And it gets in through the bloodstream. It gets in through open wounds. It gets in through food contamination. It gets in through inhalation. On a modern battlefield that the United States has anything to do with, it is actually ubiquitous, is it not?
Yes, depleted uranium is very, very nasty stuff. First of all, it's radioactive, and as you just mentioned, it becomes aerolized, and it happens when it makes contact with its target. Depleted uranium penetrators and bunker buster bombs, for example, are pyrophoric. So when they hit their target, they explode, and then they become aerolized fine, minute particles, and this is one of the most dangerous ways that you become contaminated with DU, because it then becomes inhaled typically, and it lodges in the tissues of the lungs, in the kidneys, which is also another favorite connective spot for depleted uranium. And because it's not water soluble, it remains in the system. That's one of the reasons it remains in the system. So once it does get in the system, you can't get it out.
So is the only alternative at this point some form of palliative care?
I, well, yet. What has been conveyed to me by people that are experts in this field, that there is no treatment. Last year, I presented a project in Amman, Jordan at the first Iraqi Health and Environment Conference. And it was a study project that I wanted to see further that would test possibilities of treating children in Iraq, and their pictures are on the back of my brochure. These are children that have rapid onset cancers. And as you can see by the photograph, it's just, I mean, you can see these are unusual tumors, and you ask, well, how could this be treated? So I was putting forth this study idea, and unfortunately, I've been promised funding for the project, but at the time of the conference, USAID made an announcement that they were cutting all of the funding to the programs that a lot of these Iraqis were really hoping was going to come through, because this conference, they were presenting projects of occupational issues and health issues throughout Iraq, so it's very important. So the funding was cut at that time. So, you know, right.
Let me ask you if I could. I hate to interrupt, but
No.
What was the cause of the funding cut?
Well, that was not revealed. But my sense at the time was that that was sort of the first domino to fall of many. And I think we've seen now a year later that the funding has been pulled from many sectors of the country.
There's $9 billion that was lost by the Coalition Provisional Authority under the leadership of one Jerry Bremer, who, having lost $9 billion, was subsequently presented with the honest to God Presidential Medal of Freedom. Is it possible that this is something... And I got to ask ugly questions. Is it possible that this is a function of something beyond simple neglect where Iraq is concerned?
Well, my belief, and I'll be open about it, I'm the kind of person I tend to operate from a very optimistic and positive, when possible, perspective. I'm always looking for a way to make something better. And in the situation with Iraq, I have to look at it in its reality. And in relation to depleted uranium specifically, we know for a fact that the Department of Defense is well aware of the effects of depleted uranium. The manufacturer, Alliant Tech Systems, which manufactures 95% of the Army's munitions and all of the DU munitions, is well aware of the effects of depleted uranium. So when you are using that kind of weapon in a country specifically as we have in Iraq, it brings up the issue of genocide against a population.
Well, you see, that's kind of the question I was getting at.
And this very topic has been proposed by Karen Parker, who is the lead attorney of the Humanitarian Law Center, to the UN Subcommittee on Human Rights in the late 90s. She's written extensively on this topic, and genocide of a population is now strongly considered in the DU area.
Well, you know, I remember, and it's not just DU as far as Iraq's children are concerned, Marla, you know that. I remember a question and answer session I saw with former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, and they asked her, I mean, they presented her with the facts that the sanctions against Saddam had resulted in the death of a million Iraqi
children.
These
are UNICEF figures. These are pretty sound.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't. These are sound numbers, and she said, "Well, all in all, I have to say, it was worth it."
That says everything, doesn't it? And that's the Clinton administration. So I try to sometimes remind people that this is not something that just happened under the Bush administration.
No, the war
is not its roots.
Yeah, the war was started under Bush 1. The weapons were used against the Iraqi people under Bush 1. And then the pressure and the sanctions were kept up under the Clinton administration. There's an argument to be made that was what helped to more or less neuter Saddam. That's what points to the fact that this second war was utterly unnecessary. But we're talking about now a child born at the beginning of Gulf War I, subjected to this stuff, is a 15, 16-year-old kid now, if they have lived that long.
Well, if they have exhibited and developed cancer, leukemia, which typically is happening to kids under 5 and slightly over 5, because
there's a way that their blood, because they are growing still, they absorb this toxic material more easily than an adult. So they're more subject to become ill with cancer. They're not alive now. These children, sadly, of course, are not. I'm quite certain they've passed away by now.
Well, you point to the fact that it is an almost unsolvable problem. But given that fact, where do you start?
Well, I feel like a way to start is by doing what I'm doing, and then the people that I talk to about depleted uranium will hopefully go off and mention this to other people. I think that a way to impact this issue would be to somehow be able to cease the manufacture of depleted uranium and cease the use of it. That's a very big bite, but that would help. That would definitely help. In regards to cleaning up DU, that's another sort of subjective topic that no one can say how effective that would be. But that is also an area that should be strongly explored.
Well, Marla Benoit, thank you kindly for dropping by. Again, for folks who want to look at the work, the good work that you are doing, info-mission.org.
Yes.
And also bandepletedUranium.org for an online petition.
That is the online petition at the website of iDust. I also recommend for people that would really like to learn more about this topic and go on the internet and like to look up resources, the Trap Rock Peace Center, I think, has some of the best extensive information and papers on depleted uranium, and that's Trap Rock, TRAPROCK.org.
Well, Benoit, thank you very kindly.
Thank you very
much.
It's
a pleasure meeting you here at Camp Democracy.
Nice to meet you, too.
Thank you. All right, hour three on the way. Time for the news right now. This is the Head On Radio Network. Standing beside me, working with me, my compatriot Bruce Birch. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Intelligence gathered before the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003 never found a link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. That's according to a newly released report from the Senate Intelligence Committee. It says Saddam actually viewed the terrorist group as a threat. President Bush justified the U.S. invasion by linking Saddam to al-Qaeda and 9/11. The report also says the U.S. relied on information provided by an anti-Saddam group to support the invasion. That information, that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction, later turned out to be false. In Kyrgyzstan, a missing U.S. Air Force officer has been found. Major Jill Metzger disappeared during a shopping expedition earlier this week. She's been returned to the American airbase. Near Baghdad, an American soldier was killed today in a roadside bombing. At least 8 Shia pilgrims were also killed today in attacks at a religious festival in Karbala. In Afghanistan today, a suicide bomber plowed into a convoy of U.S. military vehicles in Kabul, killing more than a dozen people, two of them American soldiers. Meanwhile, representatives from all 26 NATO member states met in Warsaw to discuss bringing more troops to Afghanistan. NATO's top commander says the next few weeks will be crucial to defeating the Taliban. In Lebanon, ships from Greece, Italy, and France are now patrolling the coastline. Earlier today, Israel lifted its naval blockade the day after its air embargo was also lifted. The last of Israel's troops are expected to leave in the next 2 weeks. In Saudi Arabia, police have banned the sale of cats and dogs in 2 cities near the Red Sea. The government gives the religious police authority to uphold social values, and dogs and cats are viewed as a sign of Western influence. In Washington, the House has passed a bill that would ban horse slaughters in the U.S. But members of both parties are angry, saying more important issues should be addressed in the final days of the legislative session. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, quote, "This week we could be passing legislation to implement the 9/11 Commission's recommendations." In Florida, today's scheduled launch of the space shuttle Atlantis was postponed once again. Officials are still working on a problem with the engine cutoff sensors and hope to launch tomorrow. Tropical Storm Florence continues to gain strength, but forecasters say it poses no threat to the U.S. mainland. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The FDA has fined the American Red Cross $4.2 million. That's to penalize the organization for failing to ask blood donors certain questions and not following correct testing procedures. Hewlett-Packard's chairwoman admits the company investigation into media leaks was sloppily done. Still, she says she has no plans to resign. BP's top corrosion engineer position had been vacant for more than a year before the oil spill was discovered on Alaska's North Slope. That's according to an internal company audit. A federal judge has temporarily blocked a plan to allow oil development on 600,000 acres in Alaska. When a 100-foot-tall sculpture is unveiled on Monday, it will list not only the names of those who died on September 11th, but also dozens of those who didn't. The sculptor who created the memorial reportedly used an outdated list of names. Belfour USA has agreed to pay $250,000 to 163 workers. That's for overtime pay they never received while cleaning up after Hurricane Katrina. And Amazon.com is out with a new digital video downloading service called Amazon Unbox. It offers thousands of TV shows, movies, and other videos from more than 30 studios and networks. Light Sweet Crude settled today at $66.25. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 61 points, NASDAQ up 10, S&P up 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Welcome back.
On switch.
Turn it on, Bob.
Guess he just went by, Bob.
Was that Deer Leader?
That was absolutely Deer Leader. Deer Leader just passed by us in a motorcade. I would estimate probably four motorcycles out front, anywhere from five to six SUVs, a whole plethora of police cars, and everybody.
The flashers gone, sirens blaring. You know what? I don't mean to sound like a bumpkin or anything, but I am one. I mean, I'm out of my element. I'm out of the hills and hollers.
Yeah,
that was embarrassing, Bruce. I am as an American citizen embarrassed to know that man is so terrified of the American people that he has to be surrounded by that kind of an entourage. I mean, for God's sakes, there was an Apache attack helicopter hovering overhead.
Well, yeah, there was, and it followed the motorcade all the way up 14th Street, over Constitution, and then up 15th Street. You know, obviously going to the White House. But you know what I've done, and now this is the third time that I've seen the presidential motorcade, because as you well know,
do they always do it that way?
Everywhere they go. everywhere they go, there is a huge entourage, and especially if they're out of town, Bob, there are a number of vans that go along with them, too, which is filled with the press, of course, that follow him to every event, too, hang on his every word. And
you mean the Johnny-on-the-spot White House press corps?
Yes, the crackhead White House press corps. Did I say head?
Oh, I think you did.
Well, I didn't mean to say head. I meant to say ass.
Crack ass.
Anyway, point being is that, yes, dear leader, just went by, and just thought we would let you know about that because now all of a sudden a stench has settled over Washington, D.C.
Well, but I want to back up for a minute, if you don't mind, Bruce.
Please back up.
Because my fascination with the whole historical perspective thing, or as dear leader's daddy would call it, thingy. There was a time in this nation when Abraham Lincoln walked out to the barricades right here in this very city to see what was going on in the Civil War. And no bodyguards. Now, I know the whole, apart from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? But pal, he was unafraid. We have deified the presidency of the United States, and I said, the Ten Commandments crowd. There's your idol. There's your graven image. You know,
yes, you're making all kinds of sense, but I also wanted to bring to your attention, Bob, that you want to talk about historical perspective. Let's fast forward from President Lincoln okay, ready?
Yep.
Music with the forwarding. Okay, fast forward to President Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was in office, 10 years ago? About 10 years ago? Bill Clinton used to go jogging on the streets of Washington. Bill Clinton used to take a Secret Service detail with him and go to McDonald's and get a damn Egg McMuffin.
I'm not sure where the nearest McDonald's is around here, but that had to be it. That had to be an experience, but no, I understand.
So
we're talking about this guy, Howard Nade.
This guy does not go anywhere if he's not enclosed by armored steel. Period.
That's pathetic. It's just pathetic, Bruce.
When he was in North Carolina, and this is not in Charlotte, but actually when he was up in Winston-Salem to visit the John Deere Hitachi plant that I also coincidentally protested at, and gave him. That was the first of several single-finger salutes I gave to dear leader as he drove by about 20 feet away. But they actually drove him into the plant. They had him go all the way into the plant. They had to clear a path from the vehicle entrance way back in the rear of the plant and drive him all the way up inside the plant so that he would feel safe. He was scared that somebody, might have a sniper rifle or something.
Well, during the campaigns, we said, you can't go see dear leader unless you sign the loyalty oath and register with the Republican Party. And it turns out, it wasn't about preventing anybody else from getting in there to see him or anything. It's because he's afraid. Can you imagine living your life, every waking moment and most of your sleep, being terrified? Do you live your life that way, Bruce?
Oh, absolutely, Bob. I mean, I'm scared crapless at most given points of the day, and as a matter of fact,
of the people who are taking care of him.
Exactly. I live in fear of what the fear mongers might do.
I don't know. It's just embarrassing.
We've got some callers.
Let's go to the phones.
We got. Let's see who's up first. I think we got. David up first?
David?
Yeah, David on line one. Oh, I'm sorry, Richard or David?
Richard.
Whoever comes on. Hello, you're here on Head On Radio Network. This is Bob and Bruce broadcasting from Camp Democracy.
Is it David or is it Richard?
It's David. Hey, David, how you doing, buddy?
David, welcome.
Well, thank you, fellas. I wasn't sure. I heard David, I heard Richard, I heard Richard, I heard David. I heard a crunching noise. It's all the normal stuff except I wasn't sure.
That's only because we're not.
Well, you know, life's too important to be taken seriously, so welcome to the real world, fellas.
Thank you, because there's some stuff around here that just what we just saw, David, was unreal.
Well, it sounds
it was just
like
creepy.
It sounds like for the 4W to go to the nearest Barnes and Noble and get the next book he can look at the pictures in. There's enough gas used up to take care of a North Carolina school bus for the coming week.
It would appear so.
Well.
And then, you know, choppers overhead. Oh, my God.
Oh, well, gee, if the chopper went over, that would take care of a West Virginia school bus for a month.
Exactly. And
well,
and nobody blinks twice at this, David. It's taken for granted. I mean, this is how Caesar is treated.
Well, they've been exposed. They've been exposed to eat it and smile for 5 years. So, you know, they just smile now.
Yeah, unfortunately, they do.
Go ahead.
Don, no, please, you.
I took one for the team today.
Uh-oh. What'd you do, David?
I listened to Hannity Job for about 30
minutes. Oh, you poor man.
Jesus, did you have to, go take Excedrin afterwards?
No, actually, it was a small dose of brown liquid in a short glass in a shower.
Medicine. That was medicine.
And the snakes were nowhere in sight.
Well,
he was over the moon about what a travesty it was concerning constitutional rights of free speech that Harry Reid had written any letter about any FCC license, et cetera, et cetera, and the nation had to rise up and strike down these anti-free speech horrors that were being set in motion by the Boxers and the Clintons and the et cetera, et cetera.
Did he get around to calling him a fascist?
He may have. I didn't last that long. I finally, and I may have damaged the console in my truck when I turned it off, but I finally, you know, I enjoyed as much of it as I could stand. When I felt like I had the gist of it, well, the gist of it took about 15 seconds, that, you know, gee whiz, let's trace this back just a little bit. There's ABC, there's Disney, and there's Carl Rove's anus, right? Isn't that such a straight line? Did I overstate
it? You didn't overstate it. That's exactly a straight line.
Thank you.
And frankly, the shortest distance between two points is that straight line.
Cha-ching, we have a winner. Get that man a toaster.
I'm at sixes and sevens. I'm torn between two polar opposites sitting here, dude. Because I was in talking with our earlier guest and talking about what this place means to me within the mythos of what America is and the tawdry, ugly thing that it has been transformed into in the last 5 years. And, you know, I'm not, frankly, to be quite honest, I wouldn't say that about Bush 1's presidency. These are very specific things that have been done to this city and to the national idea of what this city should be. Does that make any sense at all?
I think if you wake Herbert Walker out of a sound sleep, he will express horror. And along those lines, don't I remember, wasn't it about 2 years ago that there was a somewhat factually based, much more factually based movie about Ronald Reagan's last years that the neocons just went berserk over? You know,
oh, yeah.
I had forgotten that. Very, yes.
Don't I remember that?
You're absolutely right.
There was just a hint that the last couple of years when he would stand up in news conferences and be talking about the weather in Shanghai when someone would ask him about trade issues, and he would just stare at the ceiling and, you know, maybe talk about the stick figure wife of his. And there was a movie that was going to put a little drama around the fact that he was an Alzheimer victim, and I would never make light of anyone that is an Alzheimer victim, but that chances are really good the last 2 years of that SOB's presidency, we were ruled by an Alzheimer victim. And then, boom, the movie went away. It was, you know, snapped, and it was gone.
That's the double standard thing.
Yeah, I thought
that's the double standard. You can't tell it. You can't tell that kind of truth. You can, however, repeat. But you know what's the news in this? To be quite honest, David, because you know this goes back to Ann Coulter alleging that the Clintons decorated their Christmas tree with condoms. Okay, that was put out there. It's papers like the New York Times repeating things like Bill Clinton fathered a bastard black child in Arkansas with utterly baseless garbage.
But that was okay. All they want to do is buttress these incredible lies told by their hate speak machine so that they can have this nice little run-up to some sort of agenda, to use your phrase, agenda lied about election and avoid the American people saying, we want to talk to you, Mr. President, about your performance. We don't want you as a failed administrator to tell us what you might be able to do 2 years from now. We want to judge you and those that supported you on what you've done for the last 5.5 years. They want to take America's eye off that ball.
And for Congress's sake and for 2008's sake and for his legacy, let's run the paranoia up and a little further up the flagpole, if you don't mind, David. When you get right down to it, you want to know what I think is the real raison d'etre of this stupid movie? It's the Scholastic tie-in. It's the My Weekly Reader teaching talking points that have been circulated based on this movie. You're talking about teaching 12 and 13-year-olds that, you know, when they were, you know, when they were 6 years old and starting grade school or when they were being born, Bill Clinton was ignoring their future and putting them at risk. It's Goebbels-esque propaganda at its raised to its highest form, and it's most pure recognition that the real place of propaganda is in affecting the children.
It's the most clear cut, pardon the next metaphor, clear cut example of smoke and mirrors I've ever seen. You're going to blame something on a president that's been gone for quite some time, and you're going to try to successfully pin a rap on him, for something that George W. Bush did. It's like this bit with this incredible, you always throw out, and you understand the true definition better than I, the Hobson's choice, this business of give me a mulligan on years of torture so that I can prosecute in an open court these men that I have tortured into saying things. Maybe the evidence is good, maybe the evidence is not. But go ahead. All right, Congress, pass this for me so that I can bring these guys to trial and give America closure on these evil stinkers.
Oh, closure. Closure. You know, think about it. It's like if that movie, The Titanic, had opened with people in the water and the tugboat pilot that got it out of the Irish port that it left and blamed it all on the tugboat pilot. That's what this is. It's pure and simple.
And it just, it infuriated me. I couldn't pick it up on TV. I don't think it was on television, but I listened to it on radio. Every single minute of it, real time. And the minute he got to that routine about when Congress passes my get-out-of-jail-free card, I will prosecute these guys that I tortured into admitting things that I tell you really, really matter, and then the unspoken part. If anyone doubts this, then they're not strong on fighting terror. It was so obvious. It is so obvious. Oh, how disgusting is that?
Oh, it is. And, you know, I mentioned the My Weekly Readers, Galanti Publications, whatever that tie-in. You know, they wound up having to pull their teaching talking points. And
they were already out there.
Well, sure. I mean, it's the same thing that happens in a courtroom situation when the guy says, and when did you stop beating your wife? And then says, I withdraw the question, Your Honor. This is that.
Precisely.
On a grand scale. On a grand scale. David, thank you so much.
May I offer one last grand conspiracy?
Oh, yes, do please. Absolutely.
This business that they're really keen on taking armed conflict, whether airborne or boots on the ground, to Iran is the greatest red herring, straw man, whatever you want to call it, they've ever put up there. They, and I'm going to offer the neocons a compliment, not even they are stupid enough to do that. They are putting that up there so that the Democrats will say, don't you dare do that. You're idiots. And then they can campaign on the fact that the Democrats are soft on terror and don't want to protect the United States. It is...
Oh, Lord. Boy, that makes sense.
It's the most non-existent issue I have ever heard in politics, military science, history of the world in my life. Not even the neocon would screw with Iran right now. And over the next 2 years, and they're talking that crap, and they've got that dog-faced idiot Newt Gingrich screaming about World War III so that the Democrats will say, he's out of it. We can't possibly do that. And then they can say, see, the Democrats don't care about America. We do. Just a
only we can protect you against the crazy mullahs.
Yeah, and by the way, oh, you're my wife, you're dying of cancer. By the way, I'm leaving you. Have a nice day. Check out quick. But turn the light off before you die, would you? That's Newt. What a great guy he was. He is. All right, now I'll get out of the way and leave some room for some real callers.
David, have a great night and a wonderful weekend, all right?
Talk to you soon. Have a great time in, you know, Gomorrah by the Potomac.
That's where we are. Take care.
Night, Bruce.
See you, Dave. I'm just hanging back and listening, brother.
All right. Let's see. Should we take a break, Bruce?
Let's take a quick one before we finish up the last half hour of the show. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid, and yours truly, Bruce Burge, here at broadcasting live from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. We're really glad to be here. And you know what? Join us in a minute. We'll be right back.
Indeed, we will.
Your heart swells, doesn't it, when you really get a chance to make a difference, to save this nation from the criminals who are trying to destroy it. You know we have a chance when we stand together. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I've said for a long time that we need a sustained presence in Washington, D.C. to let the Bush crooks know that we're not going away. What they can ignore for a day, they can't ignore for a week. That moment has come. Join together on the Mall in Washington, D.C. as Camp Democracy sets up and steps in for the long haul. Stay a day, stay a week. If you can't come, help those who can. Go to campdemocracy.org to find out more. We can end the war. We can, if only we will. CampDemocracy.org. This is what real patriotism feels like.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Should be free to enter into any kind of relationship they want to enter into.
People should be free to enter into the relationships that they choose.
I think different states are likely to come to different conclusions, and that's appropriate.
When it comes to conferring legal status on relationships, that is a matter left to the states.
I don't think there should necessarily be a federal policy in this area.
This message brought to you by Lynn and Dick Cheney.
More than 1 million Americans have HIV, and many don't even know it. With improved treatment and care, people are now living with HIV/AIDS. But this life-saving treatment never reaches people who don't know they're infected. Knowing your HIV status is the best way to help win the fight against AIDS. To find a testing site near you, visit www.hivtest.org.
All right, you're back on the Head On Radio Network. This is Bruce Birch.
And I'm Bob Kincaid.
And that's Bob Kincaid over there. What are we hearing in the background, Bob?
Sounds like some anti-war protest music.
Well, you know what? More of that.
Lots more of that.
Half the volume, guys. All right. You know, we've been talking about a lot of different things tonight, but I think we still have...
our good friend Richard on the line.
Folks holding. Richard, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine, I think. I just got in recently. Hello, Bruce. Hello, Bob. You guys sound...
Hello?
Yeah, you sound very cellular tonight.
We are kind of cellular tonight.
Yeah. So, actually, an idea came to my mind that I could run by you guys. I've been thinking about this since last Thursday, about Mike Malloy and Air America and the strange things that have been going on. And want to talk about that?
No, go right ahead.
Okay. You know, I've been trying to figure out why in the world this company would behave this way. And I started thinking, you know, in the best sense of follow the money, about the strange relationship between Air America and Clear Channel. And they make rather... amazing bedfellows, don't you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, the new look at the new Air America flagship station in New York City. You know who their morning guy is?
Who?
Armstrong Williams.
I don't know who he is.
Right wing commentator. This is the guy that the Bush administration paid $250,000 to hustle their marriage initiative. Remember when that scandal broke?
Yeah.
That guy.
Okay. Well,
now,
it makes
now the
sense
flagship
to me.
Station gets, the flagship station gets to pick its own programming and only has to run a certain amount of Air America content, but that still tells you...
Yeah. Now, here I am near San Francisco, and Air America has been coming out of a clear station here. And, you know, I've been having to wonder why in the world would Clear Channel want Air America on any of their frequencies?
Well, that's a fairly easy call, Richard. The Clear Channel may have an ideological streak, but more than anything else, they have a money streak, and frankly, they've hemorrhaged a little bit of cash in the not too distant past. And so what they're trying to do is get what they've worked on all along, and that is market saturation. So that, you know, if they've got the number one conservative talk in City A, then they want to have the number one liberal talk too, so they contract with Air America, and they put Air America on, and bang. So there you've, it's actually smart radio because you've just maximized your exposure to the ultimate market share.
Okay, and I know that this makes business sense in the radio industry, but I'm beginning to wonder if there's you know, a little more going on here. How many frequencies is Air America coming out of that Clear Channel alone?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that a lot of their Clear Channel clears a good bit of their programming, you know, for the reasons that we've just discussed. Now I have no idea that, you know, I don't think Clear Channel has an ownership interest in Air America. But, you know, Air America's problem, if you listen, well, you know, our compatriot Guy James had Mike on yesterday on his program, at about, 3 o'clock Eastern time. And Mike, in that interview, made it very clear that, you know, among other things, the original mission of Air America has been, in his opinion, distorted and perverted. And he pointed out the fact that Air America, that their CEO is now, their current CEO is a guy who is not a radio person, if by any stretch of the imagination.
Supposedly in the cosmetics industry, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I'm
no
laughing.
Kidding. I mean...
It's as bizarre as anything else.
So what you're looking at is misguided corporate structuring that's a result of bad management, maybe.
Who?
Bad management. You know, I mean, I guess they think that at that level, you know, you can flip from one industry to another. But you know, radio is a very, and you know this, Richard. Radio is a very special business.
Oh
it
yeah.
It takes people who love radio to do radio, and it takes people who are committed to radio on the executive end to stand in and put up with the shenanigans and antics of the talent and manage the nervous little salespeople. And I don't think you can just bring that in from a temp agency, quite honestly.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm quite sure. I mean, I don't think that I, for instance, am a real radio person. That's one of the reasons I got out of it. But I would say that, anyway, let me continue on this.
Yeah, do please.
Now, I've been wondering about the relationship between Air America, again, and Clear Channel. What if Clear Channel said to, you know, the brass at Air America, this guy Malloy is making us nervous. We want you to get rid of him.
I suppose they could say something like that. There's no indication that that was in fact the case.
I know. I said it. This is my latest conspiracy theory. And it
well, again, you might want to catch the archive of Guy's show from Thursday. And I don't mean to put words in Mike's mouth, and I'm as close to the quote as I can come to. He said,
yeah.
"I believe they made this decision because they're jackasses."
Because what?
Because they're jackasses. And from my standpoint, you know, he basically was applying Occam's razor to the problem. The simplest answer is most frequently the correct one.
Okay.
And the simple answer is that these people are boneheads who know absolutely nothing about running a radio business.
This reminds me a little bit about the time when some executives came into Columbia, you know, CBS, and decided that they could make some money by selling Columbia Records to Sony.
Mm-hmm.
It makes that kind of sense.
Well, and that's what happens when you let the, and I have nothing against people in the accounting industry or anything, but that's what happens when you let,
the bean counters start messing with art.
Oh, yeah, sure. But, I mean, Malloy, you know, as many people have said, and I think you've said, too, is Malloy, in our way of thinking, Malloy was the hottest property on Air America.
I thought he was. I personally think he was the best talent, no doubt about it.
Right.
But he didn't have. He did not have, and I'm not being critical. He did not have the clearances that Franken did or that Randy did, in large part because of the hours that he was on.
Okay.
You know,
what do you mean by clearances? That's not a term I know.
I'm sorry, I lost that last part, Richard.
You used the word clearances, and that's not a word I know. You said that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, when you clear program, when you're running programs, to run programs or to carry a program on a given run, that's clearing a program.
Okay.
Sorry, a little too much inside baseball, maybe. But I mean, that's that's what it boils down to. Frank, you know, Frank and Randy got more, you know, got more stations because of the time that they're on.
Yeah,
you know as well as I do the nature of the AM band is that a lot of stations go down to low power after sunset.
Correct.
And that limits the reach of a program that's running during those hours.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very much where I live, but it does around New York City, as I remember.
Well, yeah, it happens there, and the little station that I was at a few years ago here in Beckley, when the sun went down, our power went from literally 5,000 watts to 25.
Yeah, right. I know it's very dramatic.
25.
Yeah.
And that impacts the ability of that affects the profit margin of a show that runs in those hours. So, it's not like he was costing them money, and God knows he wasn't costing them what Franken costs.
Right.
It was a dirt stupid decision.
Mm-hmm.
Dirt stupid. Dirt.
So we don't really know. I mean, as I see it, there are two different ways that Air America could have gone with the decision to dump Malloy. One is that they're just stupid. And the other one is that there was a real motive, that the guy was too hot for them.
I have a hard time wrapping my mind around that, Richard, simply because any good host is going to, whether right wing or left wing, is going to generate a little bit of controversy, is going to come, if he's good or she is good, is going to come at the issues with everything that they've got. Because otherwise it just turns into the sewing circle, and that's bad radio.
Right.
Could you pass me that needle, Bob?
hey, Richard, we got to roll on.
Okay.
Have a great weekend, all right?
Enjoy yourself, guys. Bye.
Thanks. Bye now.
Thanks. Sorry, Bob. I couldn't resist, you know. Yeah. Things are happening very quickly in front of us.
Well, they're kind of wrapping up, and I can't really see. Let me get my microphone here, and the federales were here.
The federales, the La Negra, the six-pointed cowboy jockeys were here. They're actually behind us now, by the way.
Are they really?
Yeah, they went back to his car.
Oh, okay.
But they were hanging out, watching us there for a little while. The Secret Service or the Park Police. I don't know who the hell they were, but they were wearing uniforms.
Well, cool. I'm glad we're being protected and served.
Too bad they didn't bring some damned hors d'oeuvres, you know.
It's worth mentioning. You know, it has not been all work while we've been here.
No, it hasn't. Stands.
Stands.
One word, stands.
No, I'm a foodie, and I appreciate it, and I love great bar food, stuff like that, and I love wings. I love my wings. I love buffalo wings. I had, bar none.
That's Marine One going behind us, by the way.
Yeah. So Dear Leader wasn't in the cavalcade of stars.
No, he wasn't.
But anyway,
Dear Leader is now making his entrance into the White
House. Well, maybe, or maybe that's him. know, there's multiple helicopters. Just like Saddam, just like Saddam had
double. Or perhaps, but anyway, then on to what's important.
Right, whatever.
Well, who says what's important anyway? Is that you or me?
Wings, damn it.
Okay, wings. Those were some damn good wings. Those wings were pterodactyl wings.
Yeah, I mean, they were like turkey wings. And they were the most flavorful ones. Stan, if you're ever in D.C. What is it, 15th Street?
Stan's was on, yes, 15th Street, and I want to say M Street?
Yeah, I think 15th and M.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Little basement bar and grill, and just, I mean, guys, look, I'm a meat eater. I eat meat, and I'm not ashamed of it. And the damn steak that they gave me was so huge. It was as big as my head.
It was the cow. Yeah, it was.
Anyway, look.
The wing.
We got all these helicopters flying in behind us. Apparently, I'll bet those are probably guests of state, probably flying into to Washington National.
You know, we are really giving ourselves away as a couple of pumpkins, Bruce.
Look at the helicopter, I'll be damned.
It's almost got flashing lights on it.
And then they fright, too.
They show is fright.
It fly right by the Washington Monument.
It's very loud. You want to hear it?
You! Yes, you! Stand still with it!
Sorry, Pink Floyd moment.
All in all, it's just another brick in the wall. All right. We're coming up on a break, it appears, Bob. It looks like we need to take our last break for the evening, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap this thing up and present it to you with a bow attached. This is Bruce Birch. That's...
I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network. By golly.
We'll be right back.
Head is blown across the ocean. Leaving just a memory.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch of the Bruce Birch Radio Program. John F. Kennedy once said, "Democracy is never a final achievement. It is a call to an untiring effort." From September 5th to September 21st, the citizenry of the United States of America are occupying the National Mall with an encampment aptly named Camp Democracy. Camp Democracy aims to bring together peace and justice movements to find strength in numbers and call attention to the abuses currently being perpetrated by the Bush administration and the Republican Congress. You've heard me say on my shows, it's your democracy too, and it's not a spectator sport. Well, now is the time to put your feet on the street and make your ideas known. Join us as we occupy the People's Park from September 5th to the 21st. Join us as we show the world what a true democratic society does when its leaders cease listening to its people. Join us as we raise our voices and call for fundamental change. For more information, including ride sharing, available rooms, and a schedule of events, please visit www.campdemocracy.org. That's www.campdemocracy.org. Thanks, and I'll see you in D.C.
Harry Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, seated next to my good friend Bruce Birch. We've had a whale of a time tonight. I can't believe it. And has anything ever flown by? Have broadcast hours ever flown by as quickly as what these have for you, Bruce?
No, actually, I was actually thinking about going another hour. You want to?
Well, yeah, not a bad idea, but I think they pull the plug on us.
Yeah, because
we are not in charge of our own electricity. We are not in Kansas anymore, Toto.
No, we're not. And you know something that's crazy is that we are the only people left here with electricity, and the U-Haul truck is gone. They're moving the camp tonight over to a different location.
Agnes, can you find Jackson Brown's the loadout? I mean, this is that situation. You know, and you know what? Now the promoter would mind at this point. We can't.
Yeah, we got to break it down here shortly. But you know, it's been a really wonderful afternoon to broadcasting here from Camp Democracy. And one of the things that I think has impressed me so much is the caliber of activists that have been here, Veterans for Peace. You heard them on the radio today. You heard them on the radio. The labor folks who have been here all day, who are at the forefront of the issues that are facing this country, you know, came on the air with us, shared their time and their message and their efforts and all the things that they do. It has been a truly life-changing experience.
It's been inspiring because, you know, I Bruce, I think you've echoed it. I've talked about it. What we say time and time again, our side of this struggle, our side of this debate is only going to form a cohesive front when we get to the point where the environmentalists understand that their issue is women's rights, and women's reproductive rights advocates understand that their issue is gay rights, and the gay rights people understand that their issue is labor. And children's safety. And all of those, and we bring all of those issues together. We bring all of those issues together, and operate from that position of strength.
Another one coming out? Now they're coming out of the White House and going toward Washington National.
Oh, brother!
You know, I think they're doing this just to upset our broadcast. Well, I really believe that.
But these folks, you know, Bruce, they get it.
Yeah. They get it. They absolutely get it.
You know, we've got to make all of these issues mean something to each other, because the minute that we decide that one issue on our side of the debate is less important than another, all the issues are going to fall by the wayside. And what we're seeing here at Camp Democracy is a determination that all of these issues play into a larger issue. And, you know, and those issues, you know, whether it's election reform, whether it's the overarching principle here of ending the war, bringing our soldiers home. You know, that's how you support the troops. You don't support the troops with a stupid yellow magnet that was made somewhere in China by a person who was strapped to the damn table and couldn't leave the factory until they cranked out the 10,000th magnet. That ain't supporting the troops. Supporting the troops is getting the troops home.
That's right. You could not have said it any better, Pa. You know, and the reality is that all of those, you know, as you said before, all these issues are totally interrelated. If you look at, and we talked about this earlier today, we were talking about, we were sitting over lunch and we were talking about the reality that consumerism is inextricably linked with militarism. And the only way that we as a nation are going to be able to get away from this gluttonous, society that we've created, you know, the SUVs and the plastic bottles of water, and that I've got one sitting in front of me that I'm drinking from. I'm a real hypocrite, huh? Is to absolutely start pouring our money back into social programs like Martin Luther King said from right down there in 1967, Bob, when he said that, you know, the only way that we can change what we're doing is to pour money back into social capital and away from a militaristic society.
Exactly.
So,
well, we're done, dude. We are done. The show tonight, of course, was produced remotely by my darling, my multi-talented, multitasking wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox, in Sydney, Australia, is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Gene is the news ninja.
Yeah!
See, I never do that, Bruce. That's your shtick. And we appreciate what he does. Now, of course, it must be remembered that this program and all the programs on the Head On Radio Network come to you because of the dedication of the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They get up every day, they go out, they build the American dream. And in building the American dream and supporting this network, they are helping to save the American dream.
Absolutely.
And always, RMR.
It's all for you.
It's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
Right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, good evening, truth seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. Program produced here in Atlanta by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman announces for us the phone number here, 800-TALK-YES, 800-825-5937, or you can email during the program, MikeDMalloy@earthlink.net. We have 8 programs left after this evening. What, Kathy?
I was just going to say that email is only good for 10 more days.
The email is only good. Is your mic open?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the email is only good for 10 more days. We actually only have 8 more programs, 3 more this week and 5 next week. So if you've been thinking about calling the program,